Hello and welcome to the Security Talk series. My name is Graham Calladine from the Security Centre of Excellence Group within Microsoft. In this module, we're going to cover the security architecture for the Windows Azure platform. So in this session, we're going to look at the typical cloud security concerns, the things that are keeping CXOs awake at night. Then we're going to delve into the Azure platform security model itself and look at the management, the compute services storage, and how it deals with identity and access. And then finally, we're going to identify the threats and look at the defenses that we have in place to mitigate those threats. The cloud model takes us away from the traditional data center within our businesses. Rather than building out server racks ourselves, we can leverage the services in a utility-like fashion, similar to an electricity company. The cloud allows us to buy more computes or storage as we need it. And just importantly, as demand drops, we can scale back, reducing our costs. This is a very different approach to our traditional data center, where your business must invest a large amount of capital to build the initial data center before even placing our application upon it. This pay-as-you-grow model brings great business benefits in reducing the cost of running your business and getting away from the hassle of running a complex data center, which is not typically the key function to your business. Cloud services enable your business to bring applications to the market very quickly. We are talking weeks rather than months, since we do not have to design and implement and manage the complex server architectures that we're so used to. In our on-premise world, we are used to controlling all aspects of security within our data centers. We fully understand in this model where our data is being stored, how the firewalls are configured, what encryption we use on our data or our transports, if our servers are hardened, what the servers are connected to, and what the policies and controls are that are being enforced to adhere to a security in depth model. We know who our data center administrators are and what the delegation model is to access different resources. We can control if third parties can access our data centers or even what employees can gain physical access to the systems, all of which is controlled by us, our business, not typically a third party we have never even met. When moving to the cloud, this responsibility shifts to the cloud provider. Now we do not have full control of the full stack. We can only control the data and application, and Microsoft, in the Azure case, has full access to the entire stack. With our application and the data in the Microsoft cloud, we now need assurances from Microsoft that the correct due diligence is being applied. That our data is safe from Microsoft administrators and other customers. In the next few slides, we will cover how Microsoft provides these assurances. In our on-premise world, we are used to controlling all aspects of security within our data centers. We fully understand in this model where our data is being stored, how the firewalls are configured, what encryption we use on our data or our transports, if our servers are hardened, what the servers are connected to, and what the policies and controls are that are being enforced to adhere to a security in depth model. We know who our data center administrators are and what the delegation model is to access different resources. We can control if third parties can access our data centers or even what employees can gain physical access to the systems, all of which is controlled by us, our business, not typically a third party we have never even met. When moving to the cloud, this responsibility shifts to the cloud provider. Now we do not have full control of the full stack. We can only control the data and application, and Microsoft, in the Azure case, has full access to the entire stack. With our application and the data in the Microsoft cloud, we now need assurances from Microsoft that the correct due diligence is being applied. That our data is safe from Microsoft administrators and other customers. In the next few slides, we will cover how Microsoft provides these assurances. If we read the current press, such as the excellent British magazine The Economist, the main issue delaying the adoption of the cloud is by far the fear of security. Just as mentioned in the previous slide, it's that lack of control and transparency that is concerning people. Essentially, decision makers in organisations need to understand and assess the security, privacy and regulatory risks for each potential use of a cloud service. They need to make an informed decision before considering adopting their cloud platform. The Gartner Group itself lists some common questions that people should consider. Where is my data hosted? Does the provider commit to storing and processing the data in a specific country? And does that jurisdiction comply with my privacy requirements? Is the cloud service provider secure? Does it implement the security controls required by industry standard best practices, such as ISO 27001, for example? Who can see my data? Does the service provider ensure that its employees and contractors will not bypass the security controls and compromise the confidentiality, integrity, and availability of the data, intentionally or not? How can I make sure the service provider is following the laws and regulations that I need to abide by? Can the compliance process be followed by service providers, and can it be verified by third parties? And what happens if the service provider goes out of business, for example? Does it have long-term viability? Can I get my data back if things go wrong? These are the kind of questions that we need to start asking. Security in the cloud world requires a mind shift. The applications are now hosted in a virtualized environment, and all the infrastructure aspects of security are now being handled for them. The perimeter defense is hidden away and looked after by the Azure infrastructure. It is still there, but you have no control over it. Network access control lists and firewalls become host packet filters and host firewalls configured automatically. Thus, careful thought must be given to the application design. Do all the services being developed need to have access to the internet? Can they be gatekeepered to reduce the number of services exposed? Front-edge services should run with partial trust where possible, perform the strong authentication and sanitize all user inputs, and then pass the data to more highly trusted services. The key point here is the developer is now more responsible for protecting data. For example, how is data going to be encrypted? How are the keys going to be managed? Basically, the encryption design of the application is now the responsibility of the developer themselves. What is the Windows Azure platform? Today, we are used to building applications on-premise in our own data centers, i.e. applications that run on Windows or other operating systems on our own tin. The Windows Azure platform is essentially computers that are running in the Microsoft data centers distributed around the world and accessible via the internet. Windows Azure is one of three core pieces in the platform itself. It provides compute power, storage, and automated service management. It allows easy connectivity to other applications and access control to provide secure authentication and authorization of access to cloud resources. The second major component in the platform is SQL Azure, which is a relational database service. The SQL Azure service is a subset of SQL Server, and it can help reduce costs by integrating with existing tool sets, providing symmetry with on-premise and cloud databases. The third component in the stack is the Windows Azure App Fabric, which is effectively the infrastructure of the Azure platform. However, it's not to be confused with the Fabric Controller, which we will discuss in due course. App Fabric connects applications and services together using two components, the Service Bus and the Access Control component. These components allow developers to connect applications and services in the cloud or to on-premise applications, such as other Azure applications, Windows Server, or other platforms such as Java, Ruby, or PHP, etc. Specifically, the Service Bus allows different services to be hooked up across organizational boundaries. It allows applications to expose Windows Communication Foundation endpoints that can be accessed from the outside. The Service Bus takes care of the technical aspects such as network translations and reliably getting data across these organizational boundaries. The Access Control component, on the other hand, lets you use federated authentication for your service. It integrates, for example, with the Active Directory Federation services, allowing you to integrate with enterprise on-premise applications. Altogether, Azure provides a simple, reliable, and powerful platform for the creation of web applications and services. Windows Azure is a collection of virtual machines providing compute and storage resources, as just mentioned. This collection of virtual machines is called the Fabric, and the Fabric is managed by the Fabric Controller, which monitors and manages every virtual machine, starting and stopping them and restarting the virtual machines as necessary. Based on the role instances specified by the customer, Windows Azure creates a virtual machine for each role instance. then runs the role in those VMs. These virtual machines in turn run on the Windows Azure hypervisor, which is specifically optimized for use in the cloud. One VM is special, however. It runs a hardened operating system called the Root OS that hosts the Fabric agent. Fabric agents are used in turn to manage the guest agents within the guest operating systems on the customer VMs. Plus, the Fabric agent also manages the storage nodes. The Windows Azure hypervisor, Root OS, Fabric agent, and the customer VMs and their guest agents make up a compute node, which corresponds to a physical server. Compute nodes themselves are managed by the Fabric controller, which exists outside of the compute and storage nodes, and it manages the Windows Azure operating system, monitors every application, and decides where new applications should run, optimizing hardware utilization. Customers manage applications and storage through a subscription. The subscription is created typically by associating a new or existing credential with a credit card number on the subscription portal website. All access to the subscription is then controlled by a Windows Live ID, which is one of the longest running internet authentication services available, and thus provides a rigorously well-tested gatekeeper for Windows Azure. Customers upload developed applications and manage their hosted services and storage accounts through the Azure portal. They can do this either programmatically or through the Service Management API, or SMAPI for short. An important point is the SMAPI authentication, which is based on a user-generated public-private key pair and self-signed certificate registered through the Azure portal. Now, the SMAPI protocol runs over SSL and is authenticated with a certificate and a private key generated by the customer. This certificate does not chain back to a trusted root certificate authority. Rather, it is self-signed and its fingerprint is associated with the subscription via the Azure portal. As long as the customer maintains control of the private key and the live ID used to create the account, this mechanism provides a high degree of assurance that only the customers authorized can access specific aspects of the service. Now, the Fabric controller manages the Fabric agent running on the Root OS, as we've mentioned before, and the guest agents run on the VMs themselves. When a customer updates their application configuration file, the Fabric controller communicates with the Fabric agent, which in turn communicates with the guest agents in the VMs, which will notify the application of configuration changes. In the event of a hardware failure, the Fabric controller will automatically find available hardware and restart the VM. To increase the security of the Azure Fabric, the Fabric controllers are run in separate nodes than the compute or storage services. All communications between the Windows Azure internal components are protected with secure sockets layer. Communication from the Fabric controller to the managed nodes is unidirectional. The Fabric agent implements an SSL protected service that has access from the Fabric controller and replies to requests only. Fabric controllers have certificates issued by the Microsoft CA that chains back to a trusted root CA. This allows the Fabric controller public keys to be rolled over easily. Additionally, the Fabric controller public keys are used by Microsoft developer tools so that when developers submit new application images, they are encrypted with the Fabric controller's public key in order to protect any embedded secrets. In addition to application keys, the Fabric controller must maintain a set of credentials, keys or passwords. These are used to authenticate itself to various hardware devices under its control. The system used for transporting, persisting, and using these credentials is designed to make it unnecessary for Windows Azure developers, administrators, and backup services personnel to expose any secret information. Now, a quick note here on this unidirectional communication. In the next release of the Windows Azure Fabric, we will have Windows Azure Connect, and that will allow bi-directional communications. So please seek out more information on this as soon as possible. Typical model of a cloud application is the standard three tiers. A front end, typically load balance, stateless web servers, a middle tier doing order processing and encoding, etc., and a back end storage tier such as SQL tables. Multiple instances of each provide scalability and availability. The roles that will be explained shortly can scale independently of others. The more worker roles that are required can just be added to deal with the load in that processing and reduced as the load drops off. And the same goes for the web role instance. Both can scale completely independently as required. A load balancer built into Windows Azure Fabric guarantees the incoming TCP requests are appropriately spread across the roles as needed. But note, this is not a typical load balancer that actually monitors load. It simply round robins the request to the nodes in a sequential fashion. In the Azure Compute Services nodes, the customer application runs inside virtual machines. Each virtual machine has 1 to 8 virtual CPUs and is allocated up to 14 gigabytes of memory. Depending on the type of virtual instance that has been purchased, either extra small, small, medium, large, or extra large. Customers do not have any administrative privileges on the VMs and application codes with least privileged Windows accounts. But do not confuse this with code running in the .NET partial trust mode or full trust, as we spoke about earlier. Now, integrity of the customer data lies within the design of the VMs themselves. Each virtual machine is connected to 3 virtual hard drives, or VHDs. The D drive contains one of several versions of Windows. Windows Azure provides the various images and keeps them up to date with respect to patches. The customer chooses the most appropriate version, and when there's a new version of Windows available, the customer chooses when to switch the VM over to it. The E drive contains an image constructed by the Fabric controller based on the package supplied by the customer. And the C drive contains the configuration information, paging files, and other storage information. Now, both the D and E drives are read-only from a customer perspective, but since the OS may need to update itself with patches, they are implemented as VHDs with deltas. Each time Azure updates the OS, the deltas are discarded and recreated, keeping the integrity of the original OS. And the same principle applies for the E drive for customer packages. The virtual network is configured so that each VM is isolated from all VMs at the VLAN level. A VM can only see the IP addresses of services defined in the configuration. And if one needs to communicate to this other service, it is routed via the load balancer and not directly host to host. This is achieved with packet filters and backup, and backed up with the Windows firewall in the host itself. Now, the Hope hypervisor is where the real action is happening. The hypervisor is running as a substrate that actually runs on the hardware itself. The root partition on the left runs with an optimized compatible version of Windows 2008 server, and it has been tuned and hardened for the hardware that's being used by Azure. It includes a variant of the hypervisor that ships with Windows 2008, which has also been optimized for the hardware and has reduced I/O capabilities since it only has to run on one type of hardware, unlike the full RTM product. Then we have the guest partitions on the right, and they are running their own Windows 2008 OSs, but they do not have direct access to the hardware because that would violate the security claims that we are making about the guest partitions. That the guest partitions cannot take over the root partition, cannot see into other child partitions, and cannot control other child partitions. They interact with the hardware via virtual device drivers on the VM bus, making requests to the real drivers via the VM bus, and then the virtualization software deals with that individual I/O request to the hardware itself, as shown by the arrows. Other VM companies run a full-blown OS in the hypervisor, and that requires specialized device drivers for the specialized OS in the hypervisor itself. Now, that offers them the ability to go directly from the child partition to the hardware via a special hypervisor OS. But MS goes via the VM bus to the root partition, as seen by the arrows. Microsoft has spent a lot of time optimizing this path to make it extremely efficient and performant. There is a tiny performance hit in this design, but the benefits outweigh this for a couple of reasons. The hypervisor and the VM bus are super thin in terms of code base, basically around 100,000 lines of code, and you want this to be absolutely rock solid. The surface area is minimized by having a super thin hypervisor and a super thin VM bus. This means the code can really be solid and can be scrutinized, and it has even been modeled by MSR internally to prove the code paths. It allows us to be rock solid about the security boundary of the guest VMs. So we know they cannot poke a hole down into the hypervisor and get onto that root partition and compromise the whole server. The other advantage is the device drivers in the root VM are native Windows device drivers and have not been specially written for the hypervisor. So they are fully tested and not brand new, full of potential new bugs. And this slide is just reiterating some of the points we've just made. An extra thing to point here is how the CPU cores are dedicated to particular VPNs to avoid side channel attacks. And as explained, that's extremely difficult to do due to the way the hypervisor is designed. The web role, which is a Windows Server 2008 x64 operating system, is running the .NET Framework 3.5 and version 4. Now, it does not run the full IIS server, as has been indicated by many presentations. It actually runs the hosted web core service, which gives us the ability to do ASP.NET and fast CGI, and allowing connectivity to users, devices and web services, etc. Other semantics are that we can accept any inbound port. The service runs in user mode, so there's no administrative rights, so you can't install software such as COM components. In actual fact, the roles are hosted in a non-admin service host process, which are actually running under virtual account SIDs, which means they are even more limited than network service or local service accounts. And the worker role is exactly the same, except it does not run the hosted web core. The important issue around security here is deciding which trust model you need to use for your roles, either Windows Azure Partial Trust or Windows Azure Full Trust. And it is worth looking up the Windows Azure Partial Trust policy, since it is more restrictive than the .NET Partial Trust policy that you may be used to. Now, by default, the roles run with Partial Trust, and it is recommended that any front-end roles processing user data should run with this Partial Trust mode and then pass data to a higher trusted worker role once the data has been at least sanitized. This front-end role or gatekeeper should also not contain any shared key information, etc. So it really should be restricted in its functionality. So Azure Storage Services provides four main services for persisting data. And that's blobs, tables, queues, and drives. And we'll go into detail in the next slide. But essentially, customers also have the option to use services such as MySQL database running within an Azure worker role. And we have guidance for that on the internet under the Windows Azure MySQL PHP Solution Accelerator. Or, as we'll go into great detail soon, is the Microsoft SQL Azure service, which is obviously the preferred service, and this is a cloud-based relational database built on SQL Server technologies. So within Azure Storage, we have blobs that can be used to store any binary information. This can be pictures that are used in a website, it can be Office or PDF documents, audio files or video files. And applications can also use blobs to create their own data storage and access methods. Now, blobs are just right for some situations, but they are too unstructured for others. To let applications work with data in a more fine-grained way, Windows Azure Storage provides tables. Now, let's not be misled by the name. These are not relational tables. In fact, even though they're called tables, the data they hold is actually stored in a simple hierarchy of entities that contain properties. And rather than using SQL, the application accesses a table data using conventions defined by ADO.NET Data Services. The reason for this approach is that it allows scale-out storage. scaling by spreading data across many machines, which is much more efficient than we would use with a standard relational database. In fact, a single Windows Azure table can contain billions of entities holding terabytes of data. Blobs and tables are both focused on storing and accessing data. The third option in Windows Azure Storage is queues, which has quite different purpose. A primary function of the queues is to provide a way for web role instances to communicate with worker role instances, for example. A user might submit a request to perform some compute-intensive task via the web page implemented by Windows Azure Web Role. The web role instance that receives this request can write the message into a queue describing the work to be done. The worker role instance that is then waiting on this queue can read that message, carry out the task it specifies. Any results can then be returned via another queue or handled in some other way. Windows Azure Drives are the latest addition to the Windows Azure Storage Service. They provide what appears to be a web or a worker role to be persistent, like a local drive, just as you would see from a typical server application. Within each Azure subscription, the developer can create multiple storage accounts. Each account has two shared access keys generated for it. These keys must be kept secret and you should protect them just like any other high privilege password. You're given two keys to allow for key rollover because it is recommended that you regenerate these keys on a regular basis, just like you would change your password every N days, for example. Both keys have the same level of access to your data, but you typically use the primary key in your service configuration file. And when the key needs to be changed, you simply replace the key in the service configuration file and regenerate the primary key. Essentially, that deletes it. This can all be performed, of course, via the Windows Azure portal or programmatically using the service management APIs. All communications for this should also be done over SSL when dealing with keys. Another important feature to note when creating storage accounts is the choice you're given about the location of your data. Although this is not extensive at the moment, you can choose to store your data in either the US, Europe, or Asia, and this at the time of this recording, of course. And this may be important to you due to your country's privacy laws. Reliability is obviously critical to your business application. Within Azure, the data is replicated to three separate nodes to minimize the impact of hardware failures. Up to two nodes can die, and the service will still be available from the third node. Customers can also create a web worker role to extract data from the Azure storage and create an off-site backup. It is important to note that any storage operations are instant and consistent, so if data is deleted, there is no system backup to recover from. It is also possible to have a separate storage account and a custom worker role that replicates the data from one account to the other storage account. The SQL Azure Database is a cloud-based relational database service built on SQL Server technologies. It provides a highly available, scalable, multi-tenant database service hosted by Microsoft in the cloud. The SQL Azure Database makes it easy to provision to deploy multiple databases, so developers do not have to worry about installation, setup, patching, or managing any of the software. High availability and fault tolerance are built in by default, and there's no physical administration required. The SQL Azure Database supports the same Transact SQL supported by the on-premise version of Microsoft SQL Server, and customers can use existing knowledge of T-SQL in development and familiar relational database modeling for symmetry with on-premise databases, including support for stored procedures, views, indexes, and other SQL Server features. SQL Azure Database can also help reduce costs by integrating with existing tool sets and providing symmetry with on-premise and cloud databases. SQL Azure supports access using managed ADO.NET classes, native ODBC and PHP, etc. And the release of SQL Server 2008 R2 adds client tool support for SQL Azure, including adding support through the SQL Server Management Studio. Additionally, SQL Server 2008 R2 and SQL Server Express have full support for SQL Azure, and that's in terms of seamless connectivity in view and objects in the Object Explorer, and much more. Many databases contain sensitive data, so it is essential to carefully control access. This is especially important in multi-tenant applications that involve users from different customers who must be isolated from each other. SQL Azure provides the same set of security principles that are available in SQL Server with SQL Server authentication. You can use these to authorize access and secure your data. We have SQL Server logins used to authenticate access to SQL Azure at a server level. We have database users used to grant access to SQL Azure at the database level, and database roles used to group users and grant access to SQL Azure at the database level. The key point here being that SQL Azure uses the same familiar proven authentication and authorization technology used by Microsoft SQL Server. SQL Azure only supports the SQL standard authentication mechanism, where the database stores and manages the credentials for the user logons. SQL Azure currently does not support the Windows integrated authentication. The SQL Azure service is only available through port 1433, so the customer will need to configure their outgoing firewall for that port. SQL Azure also has an integrated firewall that allows the customer to control which IP addresses are allowed to have access to the service, and this will need to be configured before connecting to it. During the provisioning process, SQL Azure creates a logon for the customer that is a server-level principle similar to the SA logon in SQL Server. This logon will have an administrative capability in the virtual SQL Server that will be provisioned for the customer. This account will then be used to create additional logons for authentication, as well as database users and roles for authorization. Now, when connecting to the SQL Azure service, the user will need to provide the credentials required for logon. These credentials will be protected using SSL while in transit. Now note, the connections are re-authenticated at every 60 minutes, and that's with the client software resending the credentials. It is at this point any password resets will be enforced for that connection as well. Now for performance reasons, when a password is reset in SQL Azure, the connection will not be re-authenticated immediately, even if the connection is reset due to a connection pooling. And this is very different from the behavior of on-premise SQL Server. On this slide, we are comparing the two products, Microsoft SQL Server and Microsoft SQL Azure. As just discussed, Microsoft SQL Server supports Windows integrated authentication using Active Directory credentials for user logon, whereas SQL Azure database supports only the SQL authentication and does not support Windows authentication. Both Microsoft SQL Server and SQL Azure use the same authorization model for users and roles created in the database. Microsoft SQL Server has a fixed server-wide role such as server admin, security admin, and DB creator. These roles do not exist in SQL Azure. Instead, SQL Azure has the login manager role for creating logons and DB manager role for creating and managing databases. Access to both SQL Server and SQL Azure happens on the wire using the same tabular data stream, TDS application layer protocol, protected using secure sockets layer over port 1433. Use of SSL is optional for Microsoft SQL Server, but it is mandatory for SQL Azure. In SQL Server, any IP address-based access control needs to be done at the host or network level, using a host firewall or a network firewall. SQL Azure has a built-in firewall that prevents all access to your SQL Azure server until the customer specifies which computers have permissions. The firewall grants access based on the originating IP address of each request. Critically, SQL Server provides real-time encryption of stored data at the page level using its transparent data encryption feature. Native encryption is currently not available in SQL Azure. Windows Azure App Fabric provides secure connectivity and access control for customers with the need to integrate cloud services with on-premise systems such as AD to perform business-to-business integration or to connect to remote devices. The Access Control Service provides federated claim-based access control for web services. Developers can use these services to build distributed or composite applications. By supporting industry standards like WS Federation and SAML 2.0, Access Control 2.0 provides an easy way to control access to web services and while integrating with standards-based identity providers. including Active Directory and other popular web identity providers, including Windows Live ID, Google, Yahoo, and Facebook, for example. On the application side, Azure integrates with Windows Identity Foundation Framework, WIF, so developers can build applications that can be hosted on-premise and on the cloud without changes. The App Fabric Access Control Service, or ACS for short, simplifies access for web applications and web services by reducing the cost and complexity of integrating with various customer identity technologies. Instead of having to address different customer technologies, applications can simply leverage the App Fabric ACS, integrating with all identity models and technologies that App Fabric supports through a simple provisioning process and through a REST-based management API. Now, the current version of App Fabric ACS 1.0 provides support for only REST web services. The next release of ACS 2.0 will expand the features of ACS significantly, allowing you to integrate single sign-on and centralized authorization also for web applications and SOAP web-based services. The highlights of ACS 2 are as follows. Broad identity provider support, allowing developers to build applications and services that will accept both enterprise identities through the integration of Active Directory Federation Services 2.0 and a broad range of web identities through the support of Windows Live ID, OpenID, Google, Yahoo, and even Facebook, and using a single code base, still supporting WS Trust and WS Federation, and full integration of Windows Identity Foundation, or WIF. Developers can apply the familiar WIF identity programmer model and tooling for cloud applications and services. A new management web portal is available, giving simple, complete, and control over all access control settings. This release will make it easier for developers to support a broad range of security and access scenarios, and Microsoft believes it is a major step forward towards the goal of supporting any identity in any application. It also extends the value that customers get when they use cloud applications together with a full on-premise identity technology stack, including ADFS 2.0 and WIF. This version is currently in test in the Windows Azure Labs environment, available at http://portal.appfabriclabs.com. In cloud-based environments, some of the traditional security threats that affect on-premise applications still exist and need to be mitigated by cloud-based applications. Threats due to relying on untrusted user input, such as cross-site scripting or SQL injection. Network-based attacks against the underlying network infrastructure, whether on the client side, such as DNS spoofing, or on the server side, such as distributed denial of service attacks. Some threats are common between on-premise and cloud-based platforms, but are expanded due to the latter case to the outsourcing of a large part of the stack to a third-party provider. With customers' data residing on a shared infrastructure, managed by a service provider and physically located somewhere in the cloud, threats related to ensuring that the data is isolated from other customers and sits in the right jurisdiction with the appropriate legal and privacy safeguards becomes much more of a concern. Customers always have to trust the system's administrators, but in cloud-based platforms, these administrators are now employees or contractors of the service provider, which the customer has no direct contact or management over. Cloud-based environments also introduce new threats that are not typically present in on-premise environments. Cloud environments virtualize the hosts used to run the customer applications on top of an existing shared infrastructure and rely on the host operating system and the hypervisor to enforce the boundaries between individual machines. This opens up the possibility of logical attacks that would allow code running the VMs to elevate privileges and gain access to host server or to other virtual machines running on top of the same physical node. A new possibility is also the hijacking attacks, where attackers are able to compromise the security of the virtual machine or the host operating system by gaining control using rootkits. On the other hand, in cloud-based environments, some of the threats commonly found in on-premise environments are now handled by the service provider and are now not a concern for the customers anymore. Some examples are having proper patch management and ensuring high availability and failover. To address these concerns, Microsoft implements a defense-in-depth model within the Azure and its data centers. In the previous slides, we have discussed many of these layers of security, and here we will just recap briefly. At the data layer, access to the data stored in Azure is controlled using strong access keys that are provisioned to the customer when signing up for a storage account. We also have SQL Azure, as discussed in detail. At the application layer, Azure developers have the choice to run their front-end code under the default setting of partial trust, a sandbox that blocks access to native code components and helps ensure the integrity of the platform. At the host level, Azure virtual machines run with a special version of Windows 2008 stripped down of all the necessary components to reduce the attack surface and the patch management requirements. Virtual machine boundaries are enforced by an underlying hardened hypervisor and do not depend on the security of the VM in Windows operating system. At the network level, all traffic to and from virtual machines are filtered according to the policy defined by the customer and enforced by a firewall on the virtual machine, as well as the firewall run on the host root system. Microsoft also deploys VLANs and packet filters to segregate network access between customers, management systems and the internet, and uses a special devices to protect its infrastructure against distributed denial of service attacks as well. At the physical layer, Microsoft runs Azure in its own data centers, which implement world-class security controls, whose security controls and information security management systems have been certified under the international ISO 27001-2005 standard, and has also been SAS 70 Type 2 accredited. Here we can see the security controls implemented by Microsoft per the type of vulnerability that they mitigate in the data centers. The model follows the STRIDE classification: spoofing, tampering, repudiation, denial of service, and elevation of privilege. Applications hosted on the Windows Azure platform inherit the security implemented by Microsoft in its hosting platform. Thus, when performing a threat modeling exercise, developers can rely on Microsoft applying mitigations to several possible security threats and can focus on the threats that are specific to their applications, such as the SQL injection or cross-site scripting attacks or clickjacking and information disclosure threats. Development groups within Microsoft use the security development lifecycle to pragmatically address the security threats that may be inherent in their software products. The security development lifecycle is a set of processes and tools designed to reduce the number and the severity of vulnerabilities in software products. It encompasses education of developers, program managers, and architects in the secure development practices. It enforces accountability of individuals and product teams for building consistently more secure software. The SDL applies to all Microsoft software, including online services such as Azure. And essentially, SDL attempts to address security threats throughout the development process by using tools such as threat modeling during the design process, by following development best practices, by adhering to code security standards during coding, and by requiring various tools for testing and verification before deployment. These proactive checks during development make software less vulnerable to potential threats after release, and the SDL provides a structured and consistent methodology with which to apply them. These methodologies, which are supported by an executive commitment to security in Microsoft, have helped Microsoft develop highly secure quality software. Any customers developing Azure applications should also follow the SDL when writing software and read the SDL guidance at www.microsoft.com/SDL. Customers must be assured that Microsoft data centers are operated to the highest standards. Within Microsoft, the operational services, security and compliance team works across the operations, product and service delivery teams and with internal and external auditors to ensure compliance with the relevant security industry standards and regulatory obligations. The physical security of all Microsoft data centers is an example of the operational security that the operations teams manages. Policies define the access controls applied to inner and outer perimeters, for example, the levels of automated monitoring applied at the data centers, and the security incident notification procedures that are in force. Microsoft specifies the security requirements upon which data center employees and contractors are reviewed, in addition to contractual stipulations about the site staff. The operations services policies define a further layer of security within the data center for personnel who operate the facility. Access is restricted by applying a least privilege policy so that only essential personnel are authorised to manage services. As a result of implementing this framework, Microsoft's cloud infrastructure has gained SAS 70 Type 2 qualification and the ISO 27001-2005 certification as well. Now, the ISO 27001-2005 certification validates that Microsoft has implemented the internationally recognized information security controls defined in this standard. The SAS 70 qualification illustrates Microsoft's willingness to open up its internal security programs to outside scrutiny. SAS 70 is an auditing standard designed by the American Institute of Certified Practice Accountants to enable an independent auditor to evaluate and issue an opinion on what the service provider controls have been adhered to, and that's exactly what Microsoft does today. Data in Windows Azure is stored in the Microsoft data centers around the world based on the geolocation properties that the customer has specified in the Windows Azure portal when creating storage accounts, for example. These locations are currently America, Europe, and Asia, as shown. The law of data location is an important point here. Microsoft is a signatory to Safe Harbor and will fulfill all of its obligations under the Safe Harbor framework. A common question is how will Microsoft handle the Safe Harbor's access principle that would require Microsoft to provide access to the individuals whose information is held within Azure. In the context of Windows Azure, Microsoft is the data processor for the purposes of the EU data protection law, and we will act on behalf of our customers who are the data controllers, and we direct the EU data subjects to our customers for satisfaction of some, if not all, of the data subject rights. Some customers will just not be happy having Microsoft host their cloud applications. In this case, it will be possible for a customer to buy the Windows Azure appliance via a selected Microsoft partner. This appliance, which is more like a complete container than a device, will provide the same functionality as the Windows Azure platform, including Windows Azure and SQL Azure, etc. Using such an appliance, it will enable some customers to meet their own policy requirements or government security requirements about keeping data within the country's borders or other government regulations. The appliance is really only focused at those very large customers, since it is likely to contain thousands of servers, not hundreds. It is important to note that the appliance currently is still managed by Microsoft and is not completely isolated, and this may change in the future.
Check out the Windows Azure subscription options at http://bit.ly/try-Windows-Azure to find one that works for your business needs.